Session number 13420, Ronald Mole.
Rail 2.
As I say, my immediate reaction was to say, I wonder where that came from, and in my innocence, I'm leaning back to climb out and have a look. Fortunately, my chum, the operator, Joe Davis, he, an ex-Nottingham City policeman, he leaned across the gun and shouted, "Don't be a BF." And he was the one that saved my life, because, as I say, I was as green as grass. Sad to say, 3 or 4 days later, Joe had been made up Lance Corporal and given a tank himself. And at Tessel Wood, we moved off, and I saw Joe go down this field, number 62, in big letters behind, at the back of the tank, and he was knocked out and killed, along with Copping and another dear friend of mine, Reg Hurst. I'm told that there were about 13 88s in that tank, and yet for some reason that one didn't brew. It didn't flare.
There were 13 what?
13 88 shots in it. From there, we went forward, but obviously weak, because we didn't have a commander, although Joe did take it over, and we just tagged on behind the squadron for the rest of the day.
What happened during the rest of the day?
We met little opposition. We saw poor old infantry coming back, and the sappers, legs off, wounded, and we felt quite safe in the tank. We moved up and halted at behind the church yard at Montfleury, and then proceeded towards Crepon, Crowelly, or as the French call it, Croy. The object to get to Audreux, to the station. And as we were moving down, we lost a couple of tanks from an anti-tank gun somewhere in the air. But again, we never saw it because we were behind. We were just sort of bringing up the rear until we were able to get a new commander. So that was, as far as I was concerned, day one. But before we bedded down for the night, and it had been a heck of a long day, he had to scrub the gun out, load up with about 80 gallons of diesel, replenish 75 shells, boxes of Browning machine gun bullets. If you were a wireless operator or able to attend a wireless, one had to do an hour's wireless watch. Others had to do an hour's guard. And I should say that this was all turned 11 o'clock at night before we were able to lager for the night. Obviously, we couldn't make fires, and I was so grateful to Mr. Hines and his products, with the self-eating chocolate and the self-eating soup. This was a can with a little recess that you dug out the lid in the middle, and there this revealed a little fuse, and touched that with a cigarette, and within 30 seconds you had a hot drink. We learned, of course, the hard way, that if you didn't spike it with two holes in before you lit it, when you did spike it, you got the lot in your face, or down the uniform, the pressure inside. So, as I say, we caught them very quickly. And we also found that those biscuits that we were given surely be made of concrete, but that's all we could eat. Those biscuits making bully sandwiches or jam sandwiches or what have you. And then you could get your head down, and then we were up again at 4:30 the next morning, standing to. And this is how it went on for days and days and days.
What time had you landed on D-Day?
7:18 we were actually listed as going on that beach.
Did you go into action against German armour?
Another hairy part was when we ran into trouble was a matter of 48 hours after the beach. To be precise, maybe a little longer because it was Sunday. So, Tuesday 6th. Would that be the 10th?
From Tuesday to the Sunday?
Yes.
6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11th, I think.
So, on the Sunday, the 11th, we were going to attack a little village called Cristo, near Tilly-sur-Sioux. A recce had gone out in the morning and nothing was there. So at 5:00, we set off with B Squadron in front, infantry behind, C Squadron behind the infantry, and more infantry behind us. Now, it proved to be something of a shambles, and I think this is where lack of training, and I don't want to be unduly critical, but we were of the opinion that tanks should not go in without having infantry in front. As a result, B Squadron lost 7 tanks, I think it was, in as many minutes. 2 of them got away.
What were they hit by?
Tank shells, but we couldn't see them. Bazookas, we couldn't see them. And these German infantry, of course, were down the hedgerows, hiding. You see, the thing was that wherever we moved in this bocage country, there's so many orchards, apple orchards, cider apple orchards, and every other tree seemed to have a clump of mistletoe, which in many cases there were German infantry up there with an endless belt and a machine gun. So we were having to pop away at everything that looked like something in a tree, because they were creating havoc with the infantry, as you could well imagine. So it could have been anything that caused this shambles. Now, we were coming up behind them, and I can remember pulling up in the lee of a hedge, and about something like 200 yards or more in front of us, this hedge was in the shape of a field. We were under this hedge, and about 10, 12 yards away, behind us, was another tank of ours. It was getting dusk, and suddenly what looked like a red meteor came hurling across my front. As I was saying, this thing came across. Where did it come from? I don't know. It suddenly appeared, and it skimmed past us and struck the tank behind. And the shot went in right by the co-driver's Browning gun. sadly, that shot killed Smudger Smith, who was sat right there as co-driver. It killed Jock McIver, the driver. It killed Don Howell, the operator, going in at that angle. And the next thing we heard was, "Help, help!" Corporal Gamble hanging half out of the turret. And my tank commander by this time was Captain Nicholas Scott Wide. He jumped off the tank, went across and pulled Curly Gamble out, and they pulled out Cyril Clayton, who was badly wounded. And I'm pretty sure that it was for that action that Nick got his MC. We searched and searched, and suddenly we realised that at the top of that field, along the hedge, there was a gate. And we just spotted the back end of a tank moving past it. It was a sunken lane, but we didn't know, and that was the one that had done the damage. It was a German tank. Now, we had to go back to a point called Point 103, where we were going to lager for the night. Now, there were five Tigers that got into that on a counterattack. So, all hell was going on by the time we got back. But fortunately, they were either knocked out or they retreated.
This was on the 11th of...
Sunday, the 11th of June. Point 103. It was just like a pimple, but it was overlooking Tilly. And before Tilly was finally taken, I think it changed hands about seven times. It was a ferocious carrying on with the 12th SS involved there. I should say that one of the bravest men in my book, who never got acknowledged with any decoration, was our medical officer, the name of Captain Hood. He was a South African. What he did that night at Christo, backwards and forwards, picking up wounded, whether it was in grey uniform or khaki. So, as I say, about 24 hours later, he commandeered our tank. We were moving forward down this lane, and he commandeered the tank to bring back more wounded. He stepped off the tank, and at the bottom of this lane was a knocked-out Panther. But it had certainly done damage, because down each side of that lane were bodies. It must have caught them cold, because there must have been nearly 100 chaps lying either side of the road, backs burning, and he's turning these poor chaps over, as I say, backs burning, in a shocking state, all of them. And he couldn't find one alive. Anyway, straightened himself up manfully and started walking down this lane. Now, at an angle, there was a barn, and there were certain little apertures to allow the air to go through. And he was so confident that they would respect his two Red Cross armbands that he took off. And suddenly there was a puff of smoke I saw, and he swung round, clutched himself, but that was it. He was dead. So what we did, we moved the tank forward, lowered the escape hatch under the co-driver and pulled him in. However, prior to that, and I think this is my only claim to fame, we put two shells on delay. On the 75 shell, there's a little screw which you're able to turn a little nut, little screw rather, and it delayed it. It didn't explode on impact. And I put two shots, just like posting a letter, through one of those apertures. And it blew the roof off, and I'm hopefully that it, I'm hopeful that it got the bloke that did that to Captain Hood.
So he was Royal Army Medical Corps?
Yes, he was. He's buried in Bayer as well.
Was the fighting with the Germans in Normandy conducted with much bitterness, or was there any hatred of the enemy?
Oh, yes, indeed. I mean, there was no quarter given either way. Anyone in the Blackberry, if they were taken, I mean, we lost several lads that were just shot out of hand.
How did you know that?
We found them.
Well, how did you know they hadn't been killed in action?
I'm referring to the chaps that have been in the knocked out seven tanks at Christo. They were there. And this happened time and time again. Tessel Wood was another instance. There was very little that we saw because of the fact that we were Blackberries. I think that has something to do with it. Although we did have chaps taken prisoner. I can give you names.
Did you take any German prisoners?
Did I take any?
Did your unit take any?
Oh, yes, yes. I can remember an instance just past Tessel Wood, where they put their hands up. All we did was just waft the gun in front of them, and that quickly dispensed with the belt and what have you, and passed them back to the infantry. But we were never actively involved, sort of hand-to-hand. I mean, we were actually in the tank.
Now, after this action at Christo and Tilly on the 11th and 12th, what happened to you after that?
Well, there was this incident round Tessel Wood where we'd moved off at about 5:30 in the morning. We'd swung as a squadron in line abreast, gone through this hedge, bellied, and fortunately our tank dropped under a tree, a row of trees. And the tanks that were rolling alongside suddenly started to spark. And we found out on the radio from the officer plane, and he was a wonderful chap, this spotter for the artillery in this officer plane. He had a top hat and a white scarf. A very flamboyant character. He waggled his wings and he'd wave at you. I once saw him being chased with the 109, and he got away because he was swerving round haystacks and round trees, and this 109, he just couldn't get a bead on him. Anyway, he reported that there were Tiger tanks at such and such a map reference, which appeared to be right at the bottom of this wood in the valley. And it was ironic that the intelligence officer said, "It's a cakewalk tomorrow, chaps. Only got 4 bounds. You'll all be sat on the top by 2:00. But it wasn't to be, because all hell let loose then. And we were sat under those trees for something like 14 hours. And we daredn't move. Because of these tanks. And we had to put smoke down eventually to get out. This was by evening. We'd whistled up. By this time, we were getting support from 17-pounders. So we whistled one up from another squadron, and he went up in double quick time as he went across a hedge. Another one came, and he didn't last long. You see, the thing was that
with these Tiger tanks, they could pick us off at 2,000 yards with very little effort. Now, we had to get within 400, 500, 600 yards with our 75s. You see, the 88, it had a very flat trajectory. So you got all the clout behind it from the charge. Ours, it was a tank gun, but also artillery, infantry support, and it had a trajectory which was losing its impetus. So that was the difference between them and us. They had about 12 inches of armour on the front, and we got the nickname Ronson Lighters because we always seemed to fire first time with the Shermans.
Any other memories from that fighting at Tessel Wood, as far as you were concerned?
Well, I looked out and I saw two or three of our lads that had escaped but been shot in front of me, but that's all I did. And believe you me, I smoked about 50 cigarettes that day.
About how many days after Christo was this?
That would be about three, four days.
So about mid-June?
Yeah. I can be
specific. After that action, did you then get a rest, or did you continue?
Yes. We went back to a little spot called Jerusalem Crossroads, and we were able to go into Bayer for a shower, which in itself was an education.
Why?
Simply that there'd be about a dozen hoses and about 30 chaps all trying to wash a leg, wash an arm, or whatever, at the same time. And then we were able to have a walk around Bayer, and then, whilst we were out, General Horrocks came around to give us a pep talk, and that was great. He gave us an overall picture of what was happening. And
why was he so popular?
I think, if you'll forgive the expression, he was known as a man's man. Whilst he had the braid, he seemed to think and talk, particularly to us, as if he was one of us. He had that ability to communicate. And he'd come back from the Middle East with a reputation of being a good guy.
What kind of morale did your unit have after being in action for those days?
I think, to be fair, it never got to the bottom line. But there were days when one used to think, is it my turn tomorrow? There are always gaps appearing. Your closest chums going. I mean, this was the beauty in the sense that we'd worked as a team, both as a squadron, as a regiment, but above all, individually as a crew. We were eating together, sleeping together, and fighting together. And I mean, one of the things that we did have to do as a crew was to dig a hole about 3 foot 6, 4 feet deep, about 6 or 7 feet wide, and we slept under, we'd back the tank over it and sleep under that. Now, you can't be much closer to your chums than that for comradeship, even sharing the bed with them. There was an instance as we were approaching Cormont, which left its mark. We'd lagered for the night, and in the distance you could see Cormont. It was absolute, just a glow in the sky. And we'd bedded down for the night, And I was taking a shot, so I hopped out. And I'm watching all this, and there was there were lots of aircraft in the sky, German aircraft. And suddenly there was a peculiar noise, like a swishing sound that started very, very quiet, but getting bigger and louder and louder and louder. And I thought, well, this is not for me, and I dived back under the tank. Just in time, we were saturated with anti-personnel bombs. Now, that was a hairy experience, and I still thank God that I was a tankie and not an infantryman.
This was the German Air Force?
Yes. Unloading these anti-personnel bombs. They were deadly things. And there was an officer that had just been drafted up to the squadron who decided not to sleep under the tank with the rest of the lads. The name escapes me. So he dug his own slit trench and they had to scrape him off the wall the following morning. He slept by himself and he got one of these things to himself.
But presumably if you slept under the tank, there was the danger from the fuel tanks.
But these were anti-personnel bombs, and it was they were diesel. Which brings me to another point. As we were moving, and this was the sagacity, if you will, of the infantry, as we were drawing up alongside them at any given point, they'd say, "Are you diesel or petrol?" If you were diesel, right, we'll stay. If you were petrol, oh, we're not stopping around here. You see, the thing was that the petrol, they had five Kreiser engines and five buttons had to be pressed to start each engine so that they were running then in harmony. Now, there were five different clouds of smoke. And by the time the fifth cloud disappearing, the Germans were keen enough with the mortars to slap you back very quick. So, as I say, one of the first questions that you were greeted by the infantry: Are you diesel or petrol?
Was this bombing near Caumont before you got the break at Jerusalem Crossroads or after?
After.
So after you'd had that break, did you go back into the front line again?
Oh, yes. But you see, the thing was that as far as, oh, by the way, we'd been joined by the 13th, 18th, and the 20th, much earlier, sort of some 3 or 4 days after D-Day, we were joined by the 13th, 18th Hussars, replaced by the 20th, they had replaced the 24th Lancers. And our brief as an independent armour brigade was to support divisions. Like, we started with 50 Div on D-Day, then we moved to 49th Div, we moved to 43rd Div, back to 50 Div, and this is how we were. So we were in the line for quite a long period of time over the month of June. Similarly, the 13th, 18th, they would come and take over from us, and we used to leapfrog over each other, and indeed I was able from time to time to pop across and have a word